Okay, hi everyone. Good to see you all. And hopefully, let's see here, sorry, just a minute. So, thanks for joining us. We've got people coming in here. I have to admit everybody, so I'll do that. So, gosh, this is great. This is so this is Dr. Will Tuttle. This is May 21st, 2020. And we have our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call with quite a few participants already. Here, I'll see another one. And we have a special guest coming up in the earlier part of our time today. We're having Sue Fisher join us. I'm not sure if she's on the call right now. I just say, oh, waving. Good. Okay. Thank you. And then later we'll be joined by Dr. Armighty May, known as the vegan veterinarian. So this is really great. So I'd like to go ahead and just, first of all, just start by thanking all of you for joining us. And this is really, I mean, every day is an adventure, it seems like, with this pandemic now as we go into, I think, the eighth week or maybe more. So I know it's a challenging time for all of us. And the whole idea of this call essentially is to try to see the bigger picture of what's going on and empower ourselves to be as awake and self-reliant and also conscious and support each other too, I think, during this time. The vegan message, I think, is more important than ever. I just finished writing a new essay about this, and it was ended up being pretty long, and so I just decided instead of posting it that I will probably make it, put it into two parts. And it's called The Banquet of Consequences, COVID-19, Our Banquet of Consequences, and I think that's what we'll be talking about a little bit probably at some point this evening, and how really, in many ways, it's routine abuse of animals for food and other products that creates the deep context for disease and social injustice that we see, I think, happening a lot. And the inequalities and many problems that we're having. So we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. And there's many different levels of all of this, which makes it more confusing, I think, besides the fact that we have many vegans who are on the same page about everything, it seems like, about treating animals well and being conscious of the environment and so forth, who just absolutely disagree vehemently about the medical industry, I guess, and the medical model and the role of the media in our society. And so those are some of the things I think we want to talk about. So much love to all of you. Thanks again for joining us. This is a really important time. And I want to, of course, encourage everyone, if you have questions, to press *6 on your phone, if you have a phone, or you can unmute yourself if you're connected by the computer, if you'd like to ask a question. I think there's a way you can raise your hand as well. So I think you're automatically muted when you join. And as far as I know, let's see. Yeah, so I think we're good. I think this is being, let's see. Yeah, this is being recorded too for people coming in later. Okay, so at the very beginning, we normally like to spend just a few minutes having a short meditation, and then we'll go into, and then I'll introduce our special guest. So let's just take a moment as we begin our time together to just breathe for a moment and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have gathered here together this evening, this afternoon, wherever you are. And give thanks, knowing that each one of us is opening to the highest wisdom within our own minds and hearts, so that we may contribute effectively to the healing of not only our own lives and consciousness, but also to the healing of our world We give thanks for this beautiful planet, this shining jewel, this mysterious, abundant oasis of life in the vastness of space, these many dimensions of possibilities here, the 7.8 billion human beings, all in many ways wounded by the underlying mentality of domination and exploitation of animals, ecosystems that are being ravaged. So we send our love and healing energy and to this earth and to the animals here and to other human beings. And we connect more deeply with our intentionality for this lifetime. Each one of us right now can just take a moment and go within and get in touch with our mission or with our purpose or with our intention for this lifetime, whatever that is for you. It may be a thought, or it may not be a thought. It may be more of a feeling. However that is, I think we all have on a deep level a sense of why we're here on this earth, what we would like to accomplish or contribute to or heal or awaken to. In the silence together, let's just take a moment and feel our connection with our inner purpose. And then connect with the feeling we have of love, the feeling of yearning that others be happy and free and have all the causes of happiness, freedom, peace, and joy, and abundance, that sense of goodwill that we all have in our hearts for all other beings, not just for our friends and family, but for every expression of life. And allow this feeling of love to radiate from our hearts in ever-expanding spheres of light, fill the whole world with the energy and awareness of infinite love. So we are aware of ourselves abiding in this awareness of love. This is not an emotion. This is much deeper. This is the source of life, the great power that brings forth life. And in the face of this love that lives inside of us, we feel the gratitude that we have for a precious human birth, for this opportunity to grow in wisdom and compassion and to be part of the healing that is so needed on this earth and the awakening that is being called for at this time in human consciousness. And so we just close by giving thanks for each other, everyone on this call, and for all of our loved ones. And through the infinite web of relations, we realize that we include all human beings, all living beings on this call. We're all connected, and our welfare is interconnected. And so we just send into the infinite web of relations a yearning for awakening, for healing, and for abundance, for truth, for liberation and freedom, for joy and harmony. And we give thanks knowing this is the truth of being, that we abide always in the eternal awareness of the understanding that what we are is eternal consciousness manifesting on this earth. And that we have a purpose, that all beings have purposes. And we celebrate this time together and give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together here this afternoon and this evening will be ripples to bring greater awareness and joy and healing and love into our world for the benefit of all living beings in the three times. In the power and presence of the Infinite Spirit, we give thanks. And so, thank you all again for joining us. And again, like I said, I'm welcoming everyone. I think we've got everybody admitted now. And so we're really, I think, fortunate to have with us Sue Fisher, who's working to help raise awareness about the situation at Point Reyes National Seashore. I know a lot of you on this call are not from the Northern California Bay Area, so you maybe don't even know what Point Reyes is, some of you perhaps, but it's a beautiful seashore. It's part of the National Park System just north of San Francisco in West Marin County. And there's been a lot of devastation environmentally that's happened there over the years by dairy operations that are operating in the national parks. I mean, it's ridiculous. But anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and thank you so much, Sue, for taking some time to be with us. And we're all really interested in finding out more. So I think you are unmuted. Is that right? Can you go ahead and speak?
I am unmuted.
Great. All right. Yes, I hear you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for inviting me here. And thank you to you and your community for all that you're doing for all beings on this planet.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate being able to share the plight of Point Reyes, which is, as you said, a beautiful national park in Northern California. So Point Reyes is in the process of updating their general management plan. And the reason they're doing this is because they were sued a couple of years ago by an environmental group because during the height of the drought, a number of the Thule elk in one of the herds, and the Thule elk, by the way, are a subspecies of elk found only here in California, and they're currently at about 1% of their original population. And a number of them died from thirst because the dairy operators and the there's also cattle being raised for meat, fenced them off from fresh water. Under the watchful eye of the national park, these animals died. Hence, an environmental group brought a lawsuit against them, and now they're mandated to come up with a new management plan, or at least amend their management plan. There are several options on this plan. And before I go into that, just basically by law, national parks are mandated to manage all national parks in a manner that provides maximum protection and restoration of the natural environment. So keep that in mind.
Right.
So they now have several options to choose from, and we understand that this will be signed by the director, the regional director, probably by sometime in June. One of the options, the one that we favor, is eliminate all agriculture within the park. There's several other options. They all have varying degrees of agriculture. The one that the National Park Service, we have come to learn, they are leaning towards allowing these ranches to remain, extending their leases, and they may also start doing other things such as chickens and pigs, so actually increasing their operations is what they're leaning toward. Now, because of this lawsuit, they were required to do some environmental impact statements, which they did. And by their own environmental impact statements, it shows that the damage caused by the cows, particularly the dairy cows, is having a huge impact. It's affecting the soil, the water, the air, native plants, and animals within the park. This water in the park is some of the most contaminated in California. Think thousands of pounds of manure. It rains, it's washed into the streams, it goes into the ocean. It's affecting where the Soho salmon spawn, where the elephant seals raise their pups. And this is going on in a national park. Due to the grazing style of cows, it is just disseminating the natural grasses. Whereas where the elk graze, they do it in a manner, it actually encourages the native grasses to continue and to proliferate. I had the opportunity to go there with Laura Cunningham, this amazing biologist who is trying to save the park with one of the groups. And when she took me to the areas where it was just the wildlife, the land is amazing. When you go to the dairy farms, which you can walk on any of the dairy farms because this is national parkland. They don't like you going there, but they can't stop you. The cows are standing in their own manure and urine. It's heartbreaking to see the cows, where they wait to be fed on these, it's kind of like a feedlot with hay, because they can't grow enough hay there, so they bring it in by semi-trucks, which is causing a tremendous amount of pollution, and then think of the havoc that causes on wildlife that are crossing the roads as these semi-trucks come through. So it clearly, this should not be going, I don't think this should be going on, period, but it definitely shouldn't be going on in a national park. There was a public comment period that the park opened up, and 91% of the comments were phase out the dairy farms and the ranches in the park. And now the national park is saying, well, that's more of an opinion. We don't necessarily have to go by that. Well, we say no, enough is enough. So what I'm asking is if you could just help to get the word out, and you don't have to be from California. This is a national park, and this will set precedence for other national parks if this is allowed to go on, for business and agriculture to be in these parks. So I can post in the chat a group. Yeah. It's forelk, forelk.org. And if you go there, there's more information. It will also, there's restorepointreyes.org. I'll give you this information, and it gives you some easy ways that you can help to get the word out, people to contact. I'll also put my email in there. I'm more than happy if you shoot me an email. I will send you the email that I've been sending to organizations and friends. And it has some quick little speaking points, who to call, and a quick little blurb on what you could write, suggestions, and who to write. I'm making it as easy for you as I can. I'm all just right. Asking for your help, and I would appreciate it tremendously, as would the elk and all the wildlife in the national park. And the cows.
Thank you. All right. Wow. That's a great summary. And there's I watched a documentary video that was made by a fellow.
Skylar Thomas?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's amazing video. Yeah.
Right.
So that's what opened my eyes to this, actually.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So if you can post in the chat, maybe whatever you can, you know, any links you have,
okay,
to videos or to email or whatever, so I can copy that to everybody for later, and people can copy it down to themselves.
Great, that would be fantastic. That'd be
good, because I think, like you say, this isn't only about this one national park, which is beautiful. We've been there many times over the years, and it's pristine. I mean, what parts of it are, seem to be, but then you realize that this has got some of the most highest level of pollution in the entire state of California is in this park. It's just absolutely hideously polluted. And then there's the cruelty and abuse of the cows and wildlife being killed by all the machines and by the pollution and the complete destruction of the habitat for the elk, which, as you said, are only 1% of their former territory. So this is really a crisis, actually, and sets a precedent for parks everywhere. So this, not just for this administration, but for future administrations,
yeah.
We need to do the best we can, obviously, to stand up for these animals. And so thank you so much for the work you're doing, Sue. And if anyone has a specific question, go ahead and unmute yourself and just ask. I think we have a minute here. But if you don't, then we'll go on to the next thing. So let's see, does anyone have a question for Sue, or a comment, or
can you hear me?
Somebody's saying something.
It's Mike Dolan. Sue, can you
hear me? Hi, Mike. Yeah.
Yes.
My microphone's not very good, but I believe also that there's going to be a culling of the elk that are there because there are too many and they're eating resources that will be used by the cattle. Is that true?
That is true, and in the plan that they are thinking of signing into place, that would allow the ag operations to stay there. It calls for culling to keep the numbers down, if you can believe that, and they're at 1% of their population. And there's already things going on there now, rather underhanded, you know, like an elk is found now and again, and you wonder what happened to it. And also, they get tangled up in the fence, and they end up dying because they can't get out of the fencing.
Yes, right. Yeah, I saw that. They have fencing everywhere.
That's a shame. And, thank you.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good question. There's a question by April. Do you describe for us on the 4ELK website how to preemptively speak up to all national farms? So is that this is for the specific case.
This would be for this particular park, but certainly this would be applicable to other national parks if there's issues going on there. But this is specific to this park.
And there's basically, I think, the regional director of the national parks has to make the decision. So I would say I just write to him because he's the guy that would sign off on it.
Correct. Mr. Stanley Austin is the person who has to sign off on it. So that's a person that we're targeting, and I can give you his email as well.
Right.
And if you have any further questions or something, a question before you do anything, please feel free. I'll put my email, contact me, and I'll give you what you need.
Great. It looks like Deborah has your hand up. Deborah?
Yeah. So a couple things. Would you put the name of that movie also in the chat?
Oh, The Shame of Point Reyes? Yes, I will. And it's a fantastic movie. And I noticed on your resource list, I believe last week, there is it's kind of a 400-minute recap of that made by the same gentleman who made it, Skylar Thomas, which is a fantastic synopsis. And it's on your resource.
Wait, how many minutes? Not 400 minutes. How many minutes long?
I think he calls it, 400 seconds, I'm sorry, something like that. It's a quick little, you know, what is that, 6 minutes or so? But a really nice recap. If you have the time to watch the documentary, it is fantastic but heartbreaking. I mean, he goes out to where the calves are kept, and it's tough to watch some of it.
Yeah, I know. Okay. It's so heartbreaking, and the fact that it's happening actually on a national park, it's really slapping us.
It's a fantastic documentary, and Skyler made this. He was not vegan when he made this, and it was not even his intent to make this film. He was there filming something else. He's really into sharks. And then when he filmed this and he figured everything else and connected all the dots, he's now vegan.
It's great. Yeah, he saw these little calves in these little hutches, or they're all confined, and he didn't think too much of it, but then he went over there and then it sort of hit him how they'd been stolen from their mothers, and they were like just hyper confined in these things, and how they were just going to be raped and killed as well. And yeah, he went vegan. I mean, he wasn't even thinking about that. He was not even interested, but it just shows, you know, how the hearts can open up, and it's really great to see that happen. So, well, thank you. Anybody else want to say something or ask a question? I think that was really interesting and very important. Deborah has one more thing. Okay.
Yeah, I have one more question. Since this has national implications, do you think PETA or some other organization might want to get involved?
A big group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It definitely can't hurt, and I know other people that are working on this. We just had a meeting last night. They are reaching out to other groups as well.
Okay.
We're looking into, I'm doing a reconnaissance mission tomorrow morning to see if we can find a place to put up a billboard in San Rafael, which is a town you drive through on the way to the park. But definitely, and I've written some other organizations to see if they would be interested in getting involved as well. Because, right, the more people that speak up, the better.
Okay.
If you have any suggestions, do it.
All right. Thank you. Oh, and Judy, go ahead. Judy.
Yeah. Sue, have you contacted In Defense of Animals, that group?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
They might help, and Lisa Levinson is in charge of the, I don't remember the exact title, but Wild Animal Division, and she is great. So she would be a good one to contact there if you haven't already done that.
I think somebody may have, but I'm taking note right now and I will check.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, we're finding just hitting them with the letters and emails and phone calls is a way to go too, because they need to know that just the individual person is against this.
Right. Yeah, everyone can send an email, and I did that, I guess, a week ago, and it's, you know, it's just something. I think if it adds up, it'll hopefully make a difference. So, all right, that's great work you're doing. Thank you so much, Sue, for joining.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. It's great. Okay, so we have our mighty May is going to be joining us. I'm not sure if she's here. I have a hard time telling because most of the time I just have phone numbers here, but it doesn't look like she's saying she's here. So we have a little time. She was going to arrive probably a little bit after 5:30, and she's our other presenter, the vegan veterinarian. And I know quite a few of you may find it very interesting to talk to her or ask her questions because she has so much experience with, as a vegan, with dogs and cats and other animals and their relationship with humans and the food and all these issues that people have. So she'll be joining us later. Maybe I'm wondering, Madeline, are you free to talk a little bit about your craft? We have a few minutes. I there's some things I want to talk about too, but I thought it'd be nice to get this in because Madeline's been very busy. You know, one of the nice things about one of the nice things about if there is such a thing of this lockdown is that people are kind of stuck at home and wondering what to do with themselves. And instead of watching TV or whatever, Madeline's been doing a lot of knitting. And I can show you, actually, just in the last couple of weeks, she's been knitting. Let's see, this is a little picture here of what she's been doing. Let's see if this works. Here we go. So let's see. I'm wondering if you can see that. Something I haven't done before. Can you see?
Yes, we see them.
Can you see them now? Are they there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Well, gorgeous.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, that's. That's just one Madeline, you want to say a little bit about your, well, that's a rainbow we had the other day from our deck. Looking out over the lake. Oh, look at that. Let's get back to what was the other one. So, yeah, Madeline, can you say a few words?
Yes. Yeah. I was a little late this year to make some wrist warmers. And I thought nobody's interested because it gets warm. Even I use them the whole year round. Sometimes it's a little cool breeze and then it's nice and it's fashion, kind of a color splash. So I was sold out so fast and had some more orders. So I was knitting like 100 miles an hour. And now I have a whole new collection. I feel really great. And so, yeah, if any one of you would like some wrist warmers, they're really so wonderful to put on. We had visits the other day, and they put on a pair, and they didn't want to take them off anymore. So they're really nice. But I also do lots of gardening, actually, and the garden is it's just a wonderful place to be, especially in these times, and have nature around and all these beautiful plants and the fruits are growing and the herbs are sprouting and just being there and seeing all the different beings of plants. So I really enjoy that. And we have every day lots of herb smoothie in the morning. There is a video about that. And then herbs for every meal. So fresh herbs. It's really nice. So I really enjoy doing all that. And that's a kind of a consolation for the rest we're going through. So yeah, that's it. Thank you for listening to me, and I pass it back on to Will.
All right, thanks, Madeline. So great. So yeah, we've been busy with our garden and other things, and of course trying to stay abreast of the developments during this whole pandemic, and it seems it's really hard to keep up with it. I mean, there's not enough hours in the day to watch all the videos I'd like to watch or read all the articles, because every day, we were watching a video last night. Rich Roll had a podcast with Dr. David Katz. I don't know if you know of him, but he's a vegan doctor from Yale University who's basically questioning a lot of the official narrative from, you know, relatively from a sort of mainstream point of view, but he's saying that it just sure seems like not a good idea to be shutting down the economy so drastically because of the collateral damage, basically, and the huge spike in suicides, in domestic violence, in divorces, in child abuse, in alcoholism, drug addiction, drug overdoses, deaths of despair in general are really increasing, heart attacks, stress, and prison and mental institutions, incarceration rates are just going way up. So all of these things, and he was just saying that the problem is that the media is ignoring huge segments of what is actually news, and is also ignoring and deliberately, seems like anyway, just ignoring doctors and epidemiologists and virologists who don't subscribe to the party line. And but that is actually probably not in the best interest of the health of our society. So this is, of course, what we've been thinking and saying for a long time. And so I'm really concerned, actually more concerned than ever about the way this seems to be going and how we can mobilize. So I just personally, you know, I like honestly seeing people standing up and expressing themselves. And so for the first time, the day after tomorrow on Saturday, Madeline and I are going to be driving to Sacramento. And I'm not sure if we're going to just be going alone. There's a few people in this area that said they might join us, but they're not sure. But anyway, there's a freedom rally there. It's called a freedom rally, I think, or liberty rally. People who are opposed to the lockdown, basically. And so I'm not sure how many people will be there. This will be the third one, I think, over the last month and a half, and the last few, they've had, you know, quite a few thousand people have showed up to have, you know, make themselves heard and to call upon Governor Gavin Newsom to stop the lockdown, to open up businesses again, because this is really having a huge economic impact on small and medium-sized businesses and organizations too. I've been talking to people who they've lost their business, they've lost them, they're over, and they're having serious financial difficulties and can't, you know, people, you know, this neighbor of ours, she had to sell her car. Now she's trying to sell stuff in her house just to have enough money to make her payments basically on her house and things. So this represents, it looks like if it continues, a massive transfer of wealth from the lower and middle classes into the super wealthy elite and the bankers, the big banks. I mean, they're going to repossess probably millions of houses. So people won't own their own houses anymore. They'll be forced to rent. And this is like what happened in 2008, but on steroids. And this is none of this is really being reported very much, as far as I can tell. It's much more of an emphasis on how we have to, all these people are dying. And of course, if you look at the data, that's objectively, the mortality rate of this is still, according to the latest research, is between 0.1 and 0.3%, which is about the same mortality rate as the flu, something a little higher, a little lower, depending on which year you're looking at. So the problem is, it seems like most epidemiologists and virologists and doctors who don't agree with the party line are not allowed to speak. So the resources that I send are basically alternative sources of news that I think are helpful if you want to understand what's actually happening. And just may come to our own conclusions. I think that's the most important thing. I try to freely look beyond just what the mainstream media is saying, and maybe they're telling the truth. But I've known that from my own point of view as a vegan for all these years, I've seen over and over again that the mainstream media tends to give a perspective that sits well with their main advertisers. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been really coming out very strongly lately. He's mainly known for protecting the environment, but a few years ago, he started working to protect children, and he's very concerned about the impact this is having on children. So, somebody has to mute my phone here. Let's see. But anyway, so I think the evidence that he's presenting, and I've been following his research for a long time, is that there's really a lot of corruption. I mean, there's an enormous amount of corruption at the CDC and the World Health Organization, and that Bill Gates is just phenomenally wealthy. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the most wealthy foundation in the history of planet Earth, and they use their money, they spread it so lavishly everywhere, to the World Health Organization, to countless startups for vaccines and vaccine tracking. They started this thing called Gavi, which is to administer vaccines worldwide. And so, it's really interesting. Anyway, I've been following this stuff for years. How the Rockefellers, basically, after their whole, they got, their monopoly on the oil, got stopped, and they got sort of, their name got dragged through the mud, so they set up a philanthropic, they set up the Rockefeller Foundation to look like a philanthropic thing, but it basically became very predatory and created an AMA and other things to just take away any possibility for alternative health, to destroy homeopathy and other ways of dealing with disease, and make everyone basically have to go the route of chemical drugs, which of course really have a lot of side effects. That's the third leading cause of death in the United States is prescription drugs. And so this massive amount of wealth that pharmaceutical medical complex has been able to accumulate, they've used, I think, strategically to take over the mainstream media as well as a lot of the departments. I saw it when I was at UC Berkeley. I could see it already way back in the 80s. These corporations were moving in and funding department chairmanships of psychology and biology and so forth to control the types of studies that were being done and to control the outcomes of science. I took courses in qualitative and quantitative research methodologies, and it becomes very clear that science is always for sale. Science is very easily corrupted and manipulated by whoever's funding experiments. And when we have a media and a government agencies that as decades upon decades upon decades of corruption has gone deeper and deeper and deeper, so that these agencies like the FDA and the USDA and the CDC that are supposed to be protecting animals, protecting the environment, the EPA is another example, protecting us, protecting future generations, are completely captured. They have this, same people working in the industries are working at, you know, are in the FDA and the CDC. And so what I realize is most vegans are just not aware of this. You know, they're good people, they care about animals, but they're just not aware. And they think that whatever the CDC and the World Health Organization and Bill Gates are saying must be for the good of the world, and whatever Gavin Newsom says and the politicians must be the best for everyone. So we don't want to question any of that. And I think it's like anything, you know, the point I always make is that veganism is not a static state. It's not like, oh, I became a vegan, now I'm done. I'm perfect. I don't need to change. Everybody else has to change. I'm done. I'm home. I don't have to, you know, think anymore about things because I just, as long as I just don't eat meat, dairy products, and eggs, and don't buy wolf silk and leather, then I'm good. I'm part of, and that's true. I mean, it's wonderful. You know, you're definitely part of the solution. But I really have been trying for in my own life, and also sharing this idea that veganism is not a static state. It's an ongoing journey. It's an adventure of discovery, and it never ends because it's not veganism. It's ahimsa. And Judy Carman's written a new, is writing, and I just actually finished a new book. You should probably hear from you about that book, actually, Judy. Ahimsa, Homo Ahimsa. You know, we have Homo sapiens, which in her book she shows has really kind of messed things up. We say we're the wise ones, Homo sapiens sapiens even. We double it. But she says it's time for the evolution to Homo Ahimsa. But that's what veganism is. Essentially, it's ahimsa, which is the old Sanskrit word, as you all know, for non-harming. And it's the core of every world religion. The idea is to don't do to others what you wouldn't want to have done to yourself. And so this adventure, veganism is an adventure of understanding ahimsa, understanding non-harmfulness. What it means, I think, is we have to become much more savvy and aware and bring our lives into alignment with our values in our daily life on every level. So we have to really, I think, understand that we're called to question the official narratives about everything, including what's happening now. So the main point what I see happening now is that we as human beings for the last many decades and many centuries have been condemning billions of animals. I mean, today it's billions of animals to lives of utter misery and imprisonment and exploitation and oppression. And like we've been saying, you know, we can't keep sowing the seeds of that happening without reaping a banquet of consequences, without having this whole thing boomerang back on us. And lo and behold, amazingly, within the last 2 months, it's really manifesting. My point of view is it's manifesting very rapidly, and it's very strange in a certain sense how we seem to be unable and unmotivated to resist our freedoms being just washed away, taken, just completely just snatched away. Freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, they're gone. They've been taken away. Freedom, even they're talking about our right of bodily integrity, the right to informed consent, right? Just taken away. We're just giving it up. Why? Out of fear for a virus that has a 0.1 or 2 mortality rate, which is less than many other things where we never shut. It's unprecedented to cause healthy people to be imprisoned in their houses and to not be able to go outside and have to wear masks, which, you know, don't do anything. So this idea, I think, that we're at the mercy of these dangerous germs, essentially, and this fear that we have that gets triggered, I think really this is a manifestation of animal agriculture's underlying mentality, which is injected into all of us from infancy, of separation and materialism, that we're fundamentally separate from nature, that we're superior to nature, that we're entitled to imprison billions of animals, we're entitled to cut down forests, we're entitled to destroy ecosystems because we're special, we're humans. You can do that. This basic mentality got insinuated into our society. It's in our religious texts. It's in our science. It's in our governmental regulations. It's in every aspect of our society. This is what we're essentially calling, our consciousness is colonized by being born into this society and being compelled from the time we're little infants to eat meat, dairy products, and eggs. We're not just eating these foods. We're eating this narrative of superiority to nature, and of separation from nature. And so that creates the shadow, what Carl Jung called the shadow. The shadow is what we are, but we say, no, I'm not that. But then what do? The shadow causes us to repress our natural awareness. We don't make the connections, but that repression then wants to come out, and so it is then projected, right? So what we are, no, we're not that. We're good, loving, caring people. We just like having a steak and so forth. But we see something else that is what we are, but which we don't see. So this is the problem, I think, that we're so easily manipulated and unfortunately and dominated and oppressed, and we become so gullible because we're so easily frightened. Why are we so easily frightened? Because most people in this world are exactly what inflicting on others, right? In other words, most people in our world are going into the store, going to a restaurant, taking out their wallets, paying for meat-dairy products and eggs, and causing animals to suffer terribly, like to be raped, to be killed, and mutilated, and all of this. But we are the invisible agents of that, right? The animals never see us. You know, we're not going out and actually holding the animal down and cutting your throat. You know, we're not doing that. We just pay for it, right? So, but we're the ones that are responsible for that. And everybody knows that at a deep level. And we're eating that violence. We're teaching our children to do that. And so now we find ourselves in exactly the situation that we are creating, where we are terrified of invisible agents that we can't see that want to harm and kill and destroy our lives, right? This whole war we're basically at against nature, against viruses and against bacteria and pathogens and fungi, all these invisible agents, we can't see them, but we're so glad we have the priests, right, the shamans. In any society, there's this sort of class of healers that are sort of special that everybody has to sort of bow down to, whether it's the shamans or the medicine men or the priests that do the healing. And we have this priestly class in our society, and they're very privileged. I mean, to become a doctor and so forth, you're kind of like, you have your white coat, you have your priestly, and there's just all these incantations and a lingo and ideas that you can't question what these priests are saying. This is, they know, they have the technology to understand all this. In other cultures, traditionally, they could meet with the invisible spirits and they could help us. Now the invisible spirits are these viruses and bacteria, so they can somehow eradicate these evil spirits. And we find ourselves, and it's interesting, I remember reading some articles on this, that actually in terms of efficacy, in terms of actual efficacy as being able to help people, that modern Western medicine is actually about the same, no better than all the other traditions that have been on this planet of shamanism and this and that, whatever people have used, that really, it's not really any better. In some ways, it's a lot worse. We harm people a lot worse. but we definitely have a tremendous amount of, I think, willingness because of the fear we have, because of eating animal foods, to give away our power and to see all these enemies everywhere. And so this warlike mentality, which is we have to mobilize our defenses and fight against these terrifying beings, I think it's essentially coming out of the materialism and reductionism and separation that animal agriculture injects at a very deep level. So that's why I think spreading the vegan message is so essential now, because, and I think really as vegans, we're like especially equipped in a sense, because we're not eating animal foods and because we are hopefully questioning the official narrative, to help be the midwives to a birth of a higher consciousness on this planet, where we no longer the force, humanity is no longer the force of the destruction of the web of life here and the imprisonment and killing of billions of animals. We're seeing now that if we're really going to insist on this and eat animal foods, we are all going to be locked down. we're going to be vaccinated without our permission, the same way cows are vaccinated without their permission. Now, we're going to have our babies stolen from us the same way they do. I mean, if we're going to enforce a dystopian future on billions of animals, we're going to have a dystopian future ourselves. And this is, unfortunately, I think we're beginning to get, suddenly we can see it unfolding every day. And I think this should hopefully ignite within us a healthy yearning to be a voice for positive change, to encourage people to question what's happening, to question the official narratives, to see what's actually happening. That we, you know, we are being told in very clear ways that we're going to all be vaccinated, for example. And I think, you know, vaccines are not vegan. We have to understand that very clearly. I mean, in every vaccine, there are tissues and genetic material and cellular material in cows and pigs and chickens and dogs and monkeys and human fetuses. They're always. And so that's being injected into us along with squalene, polysorbate, 80, mercury, formaldehyde, glyphosate, aluminum, you know, toxic substances. I mean, we're going to get all that. And we don't know what that's going to do. But there's, you know, we're being treated like livestock, essentially. It's like, it doesn't matter. We're just going to do it. And I think, as this lockdown continues and things, supply chains unravel, we're going to be seeing, unfortunately, people starting to really clamor to have more of a police state, to take away more of our freedoms, to protect us. The World Health Organization, the United Nations has said that, you know, the number, I've been saying this on every lecture, I've been talking about how around 800 million people are hungry in the world, are living with hunger. And it's really unnecessary because of animal agriculture is feeding most of the food to animals. According to the United Nations, in the next couple of years, because of this pandemic and the shutdown, really it's the lockdown, and the destruction of supply chains, that number is going to double. They're saying that number is going to go to 1.6 billion people hungry. And that's going to be everywhere. People are going to be hungry. There's going to be people breaking into stores. I mean, very well, if we just let this thing keep going. So we don't want a police state, because in a police state, there's no more vegan movement. There's no more social justice activism. You can't do anything, right? This is well known. Anytime there's a police state, forget it. There's no more farm sanctuaries or vegan restaurants or anything, because if the government doesn't like it, you know, you don't have an option. So this is really, to me, like alarm bells should be ringing for people who are vegans to care about the situation, but I just haven't been seeing that happening too much. And in fact, I've been personally ridiculed and faced a lot of hostility for even talking about these things. So, but, you know, I think, so what? You know, we should just do the best we can to share the truth as we see it, and, you know, let the chips fall how they do. And hopefully we'll be able to co-create a more positive future out of all this. I still think we can. So I realize it's now 5:55. Armaiti Nay must be here. Armaiti, are you here? So I wanted to really give you the floor. So let me see. Is she here? She was supposed to be here.
I'm trying.
Oh,
hi. Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, good. So I want to introduce.
Thanks, Will, for your leadership on this. And can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. So are you just on the phone? You're not on a video, right? Is that right?
Right. That's right. Because I'm heading back home from my house calls. But we have a few minutes left, I can share some thoughts with your listeners about the vaccine issue, especially. I want to encourage everyone to watch three documentaries, Trace Amounts, which you can order from traceamounts.com, Vaxxed, which is from VaxxedTheMovie.com, V-A-X-X-E-D, TheMovie.com, and lastly, Vaxxed 2, V-A-X-X-E-D 2, TheNumber2.com. All really insightful documentaries which expose the tremendous corruption and fraud at the CDC concerning vaccine safety. Trace Amounts goes into how studies concerning vaccines and autism were purposefully distorted. Data was manipulated. Lies were told. Lies under oath in front of Congress were told about the true causes of autism, which now affects 1 in 32 kids in this country. 1 in 6 kids is learning disabled, and by age 18, over half of teenagers are on some form of prescription medication now, because, in large part, because of the tremendous rise in vaccinations that are given, and they're mandated in many states, including California and New York. So it's a big concern, and we need to equip ourselves with the knowledge of why this is a concern to be able to understand the bigger picture of what's happening right now with the COVID situation. There have been a number of declarations and pronouncements that we're not going to have a functioning society the way we understand it before the vaccine is rolled out and forced upon almost everyone on the planet, which would be a devastating thing to subject billions of people to, and would come with it a lot of injuries and deaths from these vaccines, which, as Will alluded to, include toxic ingredients, carcinogens, aborted fetal tissue, animal cells, and of course are tested on animals. So it's something we want to avoid as much as we can, and if we can band together and defend our freedoms while we still have some to defend, we're going to be in a much better position. There's also a microchip that is planned to be embedded within this vaccine they're planning to distribute, which would enable tracking of people, which was also a big concern. So whatever we can do to avoid that and also minimize our reliance on the artificial intelligence that they're trying to incorporate into our lives through 5G will be in much better shape as well.
Right. Okay. So thank you for being a voice, one of the not too many, actually, sort of well-known vegans who's also speaking up and being articulate in your concerns about the way this whole pandemic is being handled. And it seems to be an agenda to sort of funnel everyone through fear into a prison where if you don't get vaccinated, you won't be able to do anything. And I was glad, everybody was glad to see Donald Trump. First, he said that everybody was going to have mandatory vaccines. And then he said, he backpedaled a little bit and said, no, they won't be mandatory. You just do it if you want. And I think it's really very sad, really, that a lot of people will just clamor to be vaccinated, to be protected from this, to me, it's like Carl Eskilstuna calls heart disease a paper tiger. I think in many ways, this COVID-19 is a paper tiger, essentially. But and if they get vaccinated, as adults with this vaccine that they're, who knows what's in it, even Bill Gates, as I understand it, has said that 700,000 people could die, and that's probably a conservative estimate. So that's so many more than are projected who would ever die from COVID-19, I think. So it seems like we're talking about a form of insanity that seems to be taken over humanity here, really. I mean, I'm kind of shocked that this is actually happening. Every day, Matt and I look at each other and we think, we're going to wake up. This is a dream. We're going to wake up. That happened.
Yeah.
And, it's like amazing how people are willing to just go along with this so much.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think it's a shame that not more emphasis is put on the immune system. That's like the big elephant in the room that no one seems to be talking about in the mainstream news media. But it's so incredibly important that supporting our immune system can help us through these crises much more effectively than any vaccine. By taking vitamins and eating a whole food, plant-based diet, and getting sunshine and fresh air and having positive thoughts, and those all help us stay healthy. I mean, the immune system has been around for thousands of years, much longer than any vaccine, and much more sophisticated than any vaccine. And that's one of the things that's highlighted in fact, too.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for mentioning that on the immune system, because it seems like in many ways, a lot of the things that have been asked of the people are doing the opposite. They're actually reducing our immune system, because it's well understood that our mental state is very much part of the immune system. So if people are in fear, already suppressing their immune system, if they're being told to distance, I mean, we human beings are very gregarious, right? We're gregarious beings. We love to hug, to connect, to be together, to be with our loved ones. That's what builds our immune system. When you put people separate, I mean, I've seen these heartbreaking photos of little children stuck in these squares where they can't even relate to each other. I mean, this is psychological torture in many ways when you make people afraid of each other and you take away the one thing that gives people meaning and purpose in their lives, which is their relationships and intimacy with other people and a sense of bonding with others,
yeah.
And solidarity and a sense of the benevolence of life, the sense of the abundance and beauty of nature all around us, that we live in a world of beauty, that we're part of a life of meaning and purpose. I mean, everything the government is doing is destroying that. It's making us afraid of nature, afraid of each other. Anyone who is not wearing a mask might harm me. He might cause me to be sick. I have to look at everyone as a potential enemy or as someone who doesn't care. I mean, it's just shattering the social contracts, the underlying health, the health that is, you know, basic to human life. And why do people allow this? I'm like still completely flabbergasted that people are just bending over and putting their heads in the sand and saying, do whatever you want to me here because I'm afraid of this.
Yeah.
And we see that during the Hong Kong flu, which was actually much more serious than this, we had Woodstock and we had people bonding and nobody was, people were much more vigorous and much more independent, I think, back then perhaps. But for some reason, I think partly the internet is to blame. We become more and more self-absorbed with our phones. This is almost like a mask, this phone. And we become more and more disconnected from each other and easily manipulated by the technology. You're mentioning the artificial intelligence and rolling that out on a technocracy. But I think our immune systems are fed by, vegan living, which is it's a sense of a joyful embracing of life, a sense of inclusion of all life. I would think that vegans would be screaming about this, like, what are you doing? Veganism is a celebration of life. It's a celebration of the interconnectedness of all life. It's a questioning of the pharmaceutical industry. Now, in my decades of research, that the meat, dairy, and egg industries are less of an enemy than the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry is they hate veganism. They make trillions of dollars on drugs to cows and pigs and chickens. That's why they make huge profits on people who are sick, and people who have mental illness, all from animal agriculture. So we as vegans, we're going to listen to the media. That's actually 70% of the funding of the mainstream media now, actually of TV, is coming from the pharmaceutical industry, right? So they can totally control CNN, NBC, CNBC, all these, BBC, they control them so much. But Armighty, what do you think? What do you think is the best thing we can do to help in this situation as vegans who care about animals and the earth?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think sharing documentaries with friends and family is really key, because those help them to understand why we need to be distrustful of the government and not just assume that everything we're being told is true, when it's actually quite the opposite in many instances. And it's hard to get through to some people. I've had a number of people not resonate with some of the things I've posted, but a lot of people have found it to be useful who were more open-minded. And I could continue to share those documentaries, Tracing Out the Backs and Backs 2, and there are so many others that are really valuable, to just plant a seed that, you know, this is something that is not right, that our rights are being stolen away. And, you know, it's been happening for a long time now, but now it's picking up in speed. But back in 2015, when the state of California passed SB 277, which removed the religious belief exemption for kids to be able to go to school without being forced to be vaccinated, that was a big shocker. And now, just last year, of course, Governor Newsom signed SB 276 into law, which removed the medical exemption. And that was really harmful to so many families in the state of California, and thousands of vaccine injured kids who are now in a position of needing to be either homeschooled or relocating to other states. A lot of families are moving out, but it's not something we can run away from, because this is in danger of affecting multiple states and potentially the whole country. However, I do think that there are certain states that are more inclined to protect people's freedoms than others, and whatever we can do to support the efforts to retain at least some free states. You know, it's looking like New York and California and Illinois are amongst the least free at the moment, but there are some states that are starting to recognize the need for retaining those freedoms. So being alert to that, and working together, finding common ground, and building community, even if we're not going to be part of the mainstream society, you know, that's okay. We can still grow our own food if we can learn how to do that. We can still help each other. We can do barter. We can do things that will support each other, whatever it takes, as we enter into this brave new world as it is.
Right. Well, thank you. There's a lot of great ideas. One woman wanted me to ask you, this is sort of changing the subject, but you're the vegan vet, so I just want to make sure we and if anyone else has any questions along these lines, we have a few minutes for this. She has a 75-pound German Shepherd and wants to know what's the best diet for her 75-pound German Shepherd. Can she make her own food, or do you have any suggestions on that kind of situation?
Oh, yes. Yes, dogs can definitely be vegan, and they can do very well on vegan diets, because they are omnivores and have the ability to digest carbohydrates better than wolves do. There's a book by Dr. Richard Pitcairn, who's a veterinarian, The Complete Guide to Natural Health for Dogs and Cats. Check out the fourth edition. It has a lot of plant-based recipes. In fact, they really emphasize the plant-based recipes in this fourth edition. He and his wife, Susan, went vegan after watching Cowspiracy a number of years ago. They were vegetarian before that, and then when they learned about what's happening to the planet, they went to the next step of becoming vegan and decided to update their book accordingly. And there are some sample recipes from that book I can share with people, you know, about, they include lentils, brown rice, veggies such as mushrooms, greens, peas, broccoli, carrots, etc. And with the right balance of nutrient supplements that you can order from CompassionCircle.com, the veggie dog, veggie pet supplements can be added in. Nutritional yeast is good, ground flaxseed, soy sauce, you know, different flavorings. Don't want to add too much spicy spices, but a moderate amount of milder spices are well tolerated. And even garlic, you know, in moderation, can be a healthy addition to homemade preparations.
Great. Well, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing that. Anyone else have any questions about pets or companion animals or anything else for our Mighty? She's very busy right now. I think she's going to be flying off, I think, tomorrow. So I really.
Hi, Anne. Mike.
Pardon me?
Hello. Hi, yeah. This is Andy.
Hi. Oh, who's this?
Hi, Andy.
Andy Brand? Oh, Andy Schulgasser.
No, Schulgasser.
Yeah. Great, yes.
Hi. First, thank you both for everything. I am just so thankful every day that both of you are there. So I have a first, and thank you for everything you just discussed. I have a little bit more questions about the 5G, and I don't know if what I'm hearing is correct or not. Something about the reason for the 6-foot distancing is for 5G to track us or something, to get facial recognition, or if I'm totally wrong or right, can you tell us more about the 5G and our concerns with that and how it's connected to maybe the vaccines or chips or whatever?
Well, I think, you know, that's you want to say something, Almighty? You can. I can say something, too.
Well, you can go ahead, and I'll see if I can add anything to what you're saying.
You know, there's a lot of scientific research that has been showing that already even 4G is pretty hard on a lot of people, causing cancer and other problems. But 5G really hasn't been tested. I mean, there's no one argues this. It's never been tested. There's hundreds of scientists that are like ringing alarm bells that this could be really harmful to people because it goes up into the 30 to 50 to 60 gigahertz, which is, and the ones we're using so far are at megahertz. So it's like thousands of times more intense. It has a hard time going through walls and things because it's such a fine, you know, such a rapid vibration. So there has to be literally thousands, you know, millions of antennas, one for every few houses. But the whole idea is that it will allow the complete tracking of human beings. It's a military technology, basically. If it's used up at like 9 gigahertz, that will cause complete torture. I mean, if your skin is on fire. So they use that for crowd control to disperse crowds or whatever. But if you go down to, say, 60 gigahertz, it seems to inhibit the capacity of, I think it's called the calcium gate in the cells to absorb oxygen. The hemoglobin gets messed up. So there's a lot of people who are saying that 5G is actually masquerading as COVID-19 in Wuhan in northern Italy and New York City and other places. They've been rolling out 5G, and it's causing people to just not be able to breathe. It's the 5G, they're calling it something else. And there's decades and decades of history of this. I mean, this is an old tactic. When there's toxins that are spewed by industries into the water, into the air, and so forth, they don't want to take responsibility for that. So they'll say, oh, there's a virus in the area that's causing everybody to be sick. And then they can even make more money selling a virus to people that are being made sick because of polluted air and polluted water and polluted food and toxins. So and electromagnetic fields can be a form of pollution. The cells will, according to some scientists, the cells will give off what are called exosomes, which are little bits of genetic material that are basically indistinguishable from viruses. So actually, the cells, in order to counteract the toxicity of chemicals or of radiation, will give off what look like viruses. And then, of course, doctors will say, oh, you're being invaded by a virus, when actually it's just the cell trying to defend itself and communicate with other cells what's going on. So there's so much about the human physiology that we are completely don't know. I mean, people think that our science is very, advanced, and I don't think so. I think our science is barbaric and very backward, really, completely in the dark. We are so materialistic. We don't understand, I don't think, the first thing about our physical bodies at all.
Can I ask?
Is based, I think, essentially to control populations, and it's a serious concern, I think. I haven't been talking about that much lately, but I'm glad you brought it up. And the idea is that you can go out your front door. You don't have to use a cell phone anymore. The whole idea with 5G is you get rid of cell phones. You don't need cell phones. All you do is just talk. You go out the front door and you say, I want an Uber, and the Uber shows up. And then the facial recognition knows who you are and pays them. You just don't need a cell phone. You just go through your life without a cell phone, and you get directions, you can order things, you go to the store, buy things, you don't need a cell phone, you don't need anything. It's just all done by cameras that are everywhere and antennas that are everywhere to everything. So it just frees up us human beings to just live our lives without cell phones. We just, but we're going to be swimming in a soup of radiation. So it'll be absolutely total surveillance, total control of our finances. And so that's the game plan. I mean, a lot of people are saying that, and you can, you know, believe what you want, but it looks the way the agenda seems to be rolling. I mean, it looks pretty obvious, actually. That's what's happening. Armitage, do you want to say anything more?
Sure. There's a documentary, Generation Zapped, which is really good to learn about the effects of wireless radiation, including 4G and the lower generations that are still potent and can be quite harmful, actually, showing even in schools how now there's a lot more exposure to these wireless devices and it's affecting children's brain development. Today we have 1 quintillion times as much radiation exposure as we did just a few decades ago. Also, for people who do have some funds to help with donating, there's a lawsuit underway by Children's Health Defense against the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, which has been extraordinarily corrupt in failing to update their safety standards, the radiation limits. They haven't updated them since 96. So if anyone wants to donate to the lawsuit, they can go to childrenshealthdefense.org. That's Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s organization. He's working with an attorney, Daphna Tacover, who herself has suffered radiation sickness. And she's been a real powerhouse in moving the movement forward to put restrictions on 5G and, you know, also cell towers in schools where they're just putting them up without proper permission or consulting. You know, in many cases, it's being done illegally. So there are a lot of things people can do to get involved in their local communities. There's a group here in Topanga called 5G Free California. There are groups all over the world that people can join, make calls, and also get involved in their local city council. Even though the city council members will often say, oh, well, their hands are tied, but it's not really the full truth. They may be told that by certain powers that shouldn't be, but the reality is that if they are allowing a technology or an infrastructure to be rolled out, which is harmful to human, animal, and plant health, that is something they can be held accountable for. So the more people who speak up and stand up, I think the better off we're all going to be. And I agree with you that the 5G radiation in those areas where it's been rolled out already has contributed to worsening of immune systems, which has in all likelihood increased the severity and intensity of the coronavirus pandemic for those regions. And I know there have been doctors speaking out about the fact that a lot of patients affected have had decreased oxygen uptake by their red blood cells, which has caused them to be hypoxic and unable to breathe. And yet they are not addressing the root cause of that. Instead, they're getting them put on ventilators prematurely, which oftentimes does lead to their ultimate demise and death. So getting awareness raised about healthy limits to radiation exposure is going to be key, especially if we do end up having a second wave in the fall, which has been talked about.
Right.
Yes, can I
mention a couple of websites? But
thank you, Armitage. That's such good information. Go ahead, Sandy. Go ahead.
Yeah. Can I ask, so two questions. Is it recognizable? How can we recognize and know if it's installed? And the other question, and I don't know if we're being like bugged by Zoom or anything, but can it be shut down?
Can what be shut down? 5G?
Yeah.
Well,
or
I think
removed in some way by some civilian.
Yeah, people are doing it. People are burning them and attacking them all over England.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, people are, you know, trying to destroy them because they, you know, they'll kill you, really, in a way. I mean,
are they being successful? Like, what can we do? Yeah, if they're being put out, it sounds like that's what we should do immediately is try to destroy them, right?
Yeah, but the other thing is, as you probably are aware, perhaps Elon Musk and other people, there's contracts to put them 5G. Satellites into space and bathe the Earth from space. There's like 10,000.
Oh my God.
They're going
to
be just.
Wait a second. Elon Musk is trying to do
that? They're already deploying them in space,
the satellites. Yeah. Yeah. They're already, he's already put up hundreds. And,
Oh my gosh. They're doing it.
Yeah, they're doing it. So, you know, it's nice. Some people live way out in the country. They won't maybe have a 5G antenna right up their door, but the whole idea is to bathe the whole Earth. So there's no spot on the planet that's not being, receiving 5G. So I was mistakenly,
there was a conversation this morning about Elon Musk on Facebook, and I was thinking, boy, he's doing a terrific thing standing up against, you know, others and saying, I'm opening my business, tough. So I was thinking that was a good thing, but so it's not. He's fully supporting and promoting the 5G.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, he didn't want to lose money on his Tesla plant in Fremont, and he was going to lose a lot of money if the workers couldn't work. So he went to court and got an injunction, which rich people can do, but nobody else can do that. We don't have the
right,
money.
Right, exactly.
But I know. And with the other hand, he's sending up all these 5G satellites into space. So I think, unfortunately, these are the technologies that are unfolding. I mean, we're all living in a really amazing time here, and we see changes happening very quickly. I'm hoping we can just keep a bigger view. I think it's good to keep a bigger view also of the spiritual awareness that what we are is not just physical bodies on a material earth. What we are is eternal consciousness. I think to remember that we're here for a purpose, we have a life, we're experiencing this life, but we're not just this personality. I think maybe in meditation or prayer or in some kind of deep contemplation, we can connect with a deeper awareness that what we are manifests actually in many lifetimes, in many places, in many times. And this is just one of them. So we're here to learn and do the best we can during this time. What's happening here? You know, we're born into a situation where animal agriculture has been going on for 10,000 years, and the society's already enslaving billions of animals. If we were born as cows or pigs or chickens, we would be born into slavery. Well, unfortunately, it looks like our human children in the future will be born into slavery. It's just, you know, that's what's happening. But, you know, maybe not. I mean, I just think we should do the best we can for this short time we're on this earth during this lifetime to be a force for freedom and consciousness and awareness. And I think discussing these things is the first step, raising awareness about this, and not be, you know, practicing fearlessness, I guess, you know, not being afraid. Because as eternal consciousness, I use this metaphor, you know, to help myself and I guess maybe help others of the sky. You know, what the sky itself is undamageable by however many clouds there are. The clouds are temporary, and the sky is eternal and infinite. And we are eternal and infinite. And the earthly experience that we have here is always temporary. It has a beginning and it has an end. But we are the eternal essence within which this is all arising. And to remember that and to act from that space. And I think if we act from that space, there's so many of us. There's only a tiny handful of people controlling 7.8 billion people. You know, there's no way they can do that without us just letting them do it. So to somehow awaken people and mobilize them to say no to this and to say yes to the solidarity and love and awareness and freedom that we... And love for our children and our earth, that this is something. So that's why we're going to Sacramento on Saturday to just join with whoever's out there to call for an opening of the state of California and to encourage, you know, everyone, wherever you are, whatever state, to do the same thing. And, of course, nationwide, that they could pass this TRACE Act, which would do the same thing for the entire country. You know, so we have to really do the best we can to raise awareness about these things. And the other thing is just realize that the things that they are most insistent on censoring. Like what they really censor a lot is anything about 5G, man, that's just immediately taken down, right? So that tells me this is very important to them that we don't talk about this. So nobody wants to talk about 5G because, you know, as soon as you say the word 5G on YouTube, you're gone. You know, it's really, you know, you want to know who controls you, you know, look at what's not allowed to be said. So this is an important point. Otherwise, to just support each other in this adventure we have right now, it's really a roller coaster, actually. But to try to, you know, take time every day to cultivate a positive state of mind, a sense of gratitude, to be alive at this time, be grateful for each other, for everyone who's working to raise awareness, and just know that anything is possible. I mean, we have the capacity and the powers, and we maybe have unseen allies that can help with this, but we have the power to create a positive future, and veganism is the pathway. Right? Compassion, ahimsa, you know, as Judy says in her beautiful new book, Homo Ahimsa. It's just about 6:30 here, so I just want to kind of wrap this up. I want to give maybe Armighty a chance to say one last thing. If you're still here, are you still here, Armighty?
Yes. If people want to check out a few websites regarding the 5G, I'll offer those. 5gfreecalifornia.org has a section that has a lot of in-depth research science that has been done to support why it's harmful, like the lower generations even, specifically. But of course, if that's harmful, then 5G is even more devastating. There's also 5gcrisis.com and 5gspaceappeal.org, which has an in-depth write-up that's been signed on by scientists from around the world who are very concerned about 5G. There's also some really interesting work by Arthur Furstenberg. He authored The Invisible Rainbow, and that goes into the relationship between various pandemics that have occurred throughout history and the introduction of the electromagnetic frequencies that were shifting at that period in time. So it really lines up with what's happening now with 5G being rolled out. So those are some resources. I also recommend avoiding GMOs, of course, because if we eat an organic plant-based diet and avoid vaccines, we'll be in better shape to be strong in the face of what's going to be happening in the near future here. And avoiding inhalation of nanoparticles, but that's, you know, hard to control sometimes because of the geoengineering. But there are ways to detox and cleanse. So whatever you can do to support your system, please reach out and we'll get through this together, God willing.
All right. Thank you so much, Armighty. Much love to you from all of us, and really appreciate you joining us and sharing your wisdom with us here. We've really hit the hour and a half mark here. We don't like to go beyond that. 9:30 on the East Coast in the evening. Judy, thank you so much for joining us. Can you just say a couple of words about the progress of your new book, Homo Ahimsa? Because I think it would be just nice to hear a couple of words about that just in closing here, because I think that's what we're talking about, a new species, Homo sapiens.
Right. Thanks, Will. Very quickly, I just would like to say, the book will be out probably in a couple of weeks, maybe. Don't know exactly yet, but I'll let everybody know. And I'm pretty excited about it because it's what we've all been envisioning, that we actually can be Homo Ahimsa. And I think that's our big hope right now, is that we can use this opportunity, this crisis, to ascend to our higher nature, our true nature. And that's what the book's all about, is how can we do that? And can we really do that? So that's what it's all about. And I do want to say too that this opportunity, one of the things I'm not hearing very often is that human beings, the potential Homo Ahimsa, we can stop pandemics or whatever they are. because we have the power of love at our side, and we also have the power of boycotting. And so we can stop using these big pharma and big everything, big ag, obviously get people to go vegan and shut these things down, because we simply won't be using them. But I really want the large majority of people in the world to start thinking about the fact that we have the power to stop the pandemic. We don't have to depend on the government. We can't depend on the government or the corporations. They're not going to do it. They're going to, as we've all seen tonight and heard, they're just going to keep moving us in this direction. So it's going to take, like Will has said, and Armighty, we've got to join forces with each other and recognize that we have the power within us to do this, to fix all this. So thanks.
Thank you.
Good to see everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. That's beautiful. All right. Well, I'll just close with that that idea of love, because I think that's it. You know, we started with that, and I think we close with that. That has to run through everything. Love is the power of action, I think, where we don't concern ourselves with the consequences. We're not worried about what's going to happen to ourselves. Right? When we really love someone, we will put our life on the line for them. And this is what they said about Jesus. You know, no greater love is this than to lay down our lives for our friends. And animals are our friends. Humans are our friends. To act in a loving way is enormous power, because we're willing, like Gandhi said this over and over again, to actually be willing to give our lives for the truth. And I think there's something very empowering in that, not in a sense of being a martyr, but just to be willing to not be attached to my own reputation or money or accumulation, all the things I'm trying to protect. You know, our ego gets so wrapped up in wanting to protect what I've got and myself and my image. And that's really the ego. It's not our true being, which is radiant and aware and is of the nature of love and understanding and wisdom, and just acts without being concerned about what happens to the little self on the side. And that gives us the power, I think, to question not only the external narratives, but the ones that are running in our own minds that have been sort of injected as we've been colonized, so that we can begin to be an example of freedom and love and joy. So we'll see. Natalie and I just found out yesterday, you know, we live in Lake County, California, which is a rural county. They just passed it yesterday, that now we are not allowed to go anywhere without a mask. We haven't had to ever wear a mask, though. They just passed this law. We can't go into any store or post office or whatever without wearing a mask. And, of course, as Armighty was saying, our immune systems are directly damaged by wearing a mask. A mask just increases the concentration of carbon dioxide, the acidity in our body. It suppresses our immune system. It concentrates bacteria and pathogens going back into our nasal nerve, into our brain. I mean, it's just the worst thing you can do is to wear a mask if you want to be healthy. But they're forcing everybody to do that, you know, so what we'll do. But there is, we do have this little, what is it? I have it here somewhere. I put it in my wallet. I got this off the internet. And you can see maybe. Anyway, it says, I am exempt from all regulation mandating face mask usage in public. Wearing a face mask poses a health risk to me. Under the ADA and HIPAA, I am not required to disclose my medical condition to anyone. I'm going to see if this works. But it basically sort of gives some kind of legal way to not – I just don't like it. You know, a mask to me represents that I'm taking this mandatory initiation into a toxic – world. Like, you know, I think there's this they're trying to get everybody initiated into this new normal and going through isolation and wearing a mask and giving up our authority to these these priests. And I don't want to participate in that ritual because I already participated in the ritual from the time I was a little kid of eating animal food. And I could see how bad that was. You know, I had to like directly not do that ritual anymore and not eat those animal foods. That's liberating. I don't want to do this ritual of wearing a mask and pretending that I'm afraid of other people or that they have to be afraid of me. Because I think the science is clear that herd immunity requires all of us to just stop wearing masks and let this, whatever it is, this virus, just go freely and it'll be over. We'll be all have immunity and it's not a big deal. But we've never done this before and it's just very unwise and I don't want to give it any of my energy in a positive way. So we'll see how that goes. But hopefully some of you will, if you can't join us in Sacramento on Saturday, then send us your love. We'll do our best to be a voice not only for the freedom of humans, but freedom of animals as well, because we're all in this together. I think that's the main point. All right, so thank you, Madeline, for sharing with us your art and creativity and the garden. And we encourage all of you to grow your own food as much as you can, sprouts or herbs or tomatoes. We have our potato towers now. We're really excited about all these herbs and things we're getting out of the garden. And try to become more self-sufficient in our information, in our food, in our energy, and in our relationships with each other. And in a way, as vegans, we've always been subversive to an established order of violence and domination. And in a way, I think we're continuing that tradition of being subversive in a positive way and creating a positive future with every thought and action. So please have a wonderful month. We may go ahead and do another one in the first Thursday in June. It's a lot of extra work, but I just feel, gosh, it's like, this is like life and death times almost, really a challenge. If you can see it clear to make a donation at all, that's really very much appreciated at worldpeacediet.com. But whatever you can do going forward for the next few weeks, we send all our love and appreciation to you all. And maybe we can just close. I'll try this again. This is a difficult, almost impossible thing to do. But we have the prayer circle for animals where we say, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. So I'll go ahead and see if I can unmute everyone. And let's see, how do I do that? Unmute all. Let's see. Deborah, what do I do? Unmute all. I guess I can do it. Can I do it? Should be able to do it.
We could also just unmute ourselves.
All right, everybody unmute yourself. I have... can't figure out how to do that. Okay, and let's just say the prayer circle, it goes, compassion encircles the earth for all beings. Let's say that together. Ready? One, two, three.
Compassion circles the earth for all beings everywhere.
All right. Much love to you all, and thanks for joining us. There'll be a recording of this if you'd like to listen to it or share it with anybody, and go forth and multiply the message. Thanks again. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Bye.
Yeah.
Love you. Okay. Love you all. Yeah.
Love you all.
Love you all.